So maraming salamat po sa lahat ng nandito. Ngayon ay panahong nararapat upang talakayin kung ano nga ba ang mga responsibilidad ng iba't ibang sektor sa ating lipunan, lalo na sa pagresponde sa krisis ng COVID-19. Ang guest natin ngayon ay matagal na pong nasa field ng economics, and now allow me to introduce him formally. Are you ready? Okay. Yan. Sir JC Punong Bayan is a Rappler columnist, a candidate for a PhD in economics at the University of the Philippines. He is a teaching fellow at the same university, and in 2009, he graduated summa cum laude and valedictorian from the same school. Sir JC has experience working with notable institutions such as the Philippine Center for Economic Development, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the World Bank Office in Manila, Asia Foundation, Energy Policy Development Program, and the National Economic and Development Authority, and he served as head executive assistant there. Sir JC's research interests revolve around education economics, market design, public economics, and development economics. He's also the co-founder of Isapang Econ blog and podcast, which you can tune in after this if you have time. For fun, Sir JC can play the violin, and he said he likes free diving on weekends with his friends. Okay, mga ka-good gov, let us welcome the one and only Sir JC Punong Bayan.
Hi,
hey, online boss.
Hi.
Okay. And how are you feeling, sir? What are you thinking?
Okay naman. Ito yung unang pagkakataon na magle-lecture ako ng hindi nakapantalon. So nung past...
Okay, that should be fun.
Minimum
okay. <content. laughs> Oh no. It's okay. We're all secretly in our house attire. No, uh-oh. No shame. Okay. So Sir JC will be walking through a brief lecture for all of us. So sir, when you're ready, you can start presenting your slides.
Okay, sige. So I'll just set it up.
Okay.
Tell me when you see it.
Okay, sure.
Okay na ba?
I'm checking. Yes, you can see it. Do you mind making it full screen? Because we can see... Ayan, okay, perfect.
Okay na, sige. So... Okay, yep. So magandang gabi ulit sa inyong lahat. Ako si JC at unang-una, salamat Tina dun sa imbitasyon. Medyo namimiss ko na nga magturo these days dahil pati sa UP ay wala kaming mga klase ngayon. Pati yung online classes namin ay wala rin. So medyo namimiss ko na nga ang classroom. Oo. So, so as I understand it, Tina, meron ka mga tanong that you'll be asking throughout.
Yep.
Okay.
Whenever it's possible, yes.
Okay, so I'll jump right into it. So this night I'll be talking about yung economic impact of the coronavirus on the Philippine economy, and focusing in particular dun sa social protection aspect. So this is the worst economic crisis that we have experienced since the 1980s, and even possibly since World War II. So talagang it really shook the global economy and the Philippine economy as well. So it will do well for us to understand how exactly this will impact the Philippine economy in the coming months and even years and even decades. So ang talk ko ay coronavirus in the Philippines and how can we cope. Kasi I think at the end of the day, this is really about coping. But we really need to accept that the economy will really take a hit dito sa coronavirus, pero the issue is how do we minimize the damage. Okay, so yung outline ko ay, I'll be talking about first yung konsepto ng pag-freeze sa Philippine economy. And this is something I was able to write about din sa Rappler column ko. What do we mean by freezing the economy? Paano siya makakatulong dun sa effort natin to fight coronavirus? Talakayin natin yan. And then, when you freeze the economy, essentially you're shutting down the economy. And in the process, maraming mahihirapan kasi many people will see their incomes and livelihoods disappear before their eyes. So, maraming taong mangangailangan ng tulong, pero ano yung tulong na kailangan nila exactly at makukuha ba ni, paano nila ito makukuha? Noon papasok yung issue ng social protection. At makikita natin na yung social protection sa Pilipinas ay maraming gaps pa rin. O kala natin marami na tayong pera for social protection programs like Pantawid Pamilya, pero apparently kulang pa pala yung ating social protection, yung mga safety nets ba natin. And then we'll move on to sa economic aid. When you gaano kalaking pera ang kailangan natin para tulungan yung mga tao? Ano yung mga policies ng gobyerno na pwede niyang gawin? And then, syempre, kung meron kang gagastos ka ng malaki, kailangan tanungin mo rin, meron bang pera para dun? So, we'll talk about public finance issues as well. And then, we'll conclude. Okay, so, dun sa unang-una, freezing the economy. So, what does it mean exactly? So, by the way, itong mga images ko dito sa slides ko ay karamihan galing sa Rappler. At unless otherwise, galing sa Rappler lahat to. So, anyway, so, freezing the economy. So, dito sa article ko, sinabi ko na yung Philippine economy, we really need to pull a Han Solo at this moment. So, ano ba yung nangyari kay Han Solo if you watch dun yung Star Wars, Episode 5, 1981? So, by the way, Star Wars fan here. So, alam na. So, anyway, so, si Han Solo, so played by Harrison Ford, siya ay essentially ng isang bounty hunter. Pero para i-transport siya from one side of the galaxy to another, kailangan siyang i-carbon freeze. So, carbon freeze, so in case si Han Solo sa isang substance na carbonite, tapos hindi siya makagalaw, immobilize siya, pero buhay pa rin siya. Okay? And then, at the other side of the galaxy ay tino na lang siya, binuhay na lang ulit siya. So, na-survive na yung process. So, doon sa article ko, sinabi ko na yung Philippine economy, kailangan din natin ng ganong klaseng freezing na maganap. So in other words, we will put the Philippine economy in enforced hibernation. So in other words, bring down all economic activity to a bare minimum, yung kailangan lang natin for existence. At bakit natin ito kailangan gawin? Kasi dun sa coronavirus issue ay isa itong magandang halimbawa ng isang negative externality. So dun sa mga nakapag-Econ 101 sa inyo, ang externality ay kahit anong activity ng isang tao kung saan meron siyang cost or benefit na dinudulot sa ibang tao. Okay, so for example, merong isang car factory na gumawa ng kotse, tapos merong pollutants na nagawa mula doon. Yung pollutants ang maapektuhan yung mga tao na wala namang kinalaman sa paggawa ng kotse. So ito ring coronavirus, para din siyang externality. Kasi kapag ka lumabas ka ng iyong bahay, kahit na wala kang sintomas, hindi mo alam carrier ka pala, baka may chance na makahawa ka ng ibang tao. So, gusto nating tanggalin yung ganong possibility, pero as is most likely the case, hindi kasi na-appreciate ng mga tao yung cost na dinudulot nila sa ibang tao kasi baka makahawa sila without them knowing. So, to prevent the further spread of coronavirus ay pigilan natin ito at bawasan natin yung negative externalities sa paglabas ng ating mga bahay. Okay? So, for example, paano mo internalize yung cost that you cause to other people? For example, mayroong mga sinasabi na bayaran natin yung mga tao para magstay sila sa kanilang bahay. So, let's supplement their incomes, their wages, para hindi sila lumabas ng bahay. At so, in essence, we are paying people to stay in their homes. And in that way, pwede natin bawasan yung negative externality. So, kapag na-finish natin yung economy, obviously, ay magdudulot ito ng severe economic downturn. So, halos lahat ng industriya ay mag-shutdown, yung mga tao ay hindi muna papasok sa kanilang mga trabaho, yung mga businesses ay magsasara. So, meron talagang macroeconomic impact ito. At meron din mga pag-aaral na sinasabi na kapag ginawa mo ito, itong flattening the curve. So, essentially, ginagawa natin, pinapatay natin yung ekonomiya para hindi lumaganap yung virus. Pero in the process ay of flattening the curve ay wala talaga economic activity na magaganap. So, at meron mga pag-aaral na sasabi na habang lalo nating fina-flatten yung curve, ay lalong lalala yung economic crisis. Kasi when you flatten the curve, parang hahaba kasi yung duration ng virus eh. kung ang purpose mo lang ay bawasan natin yung peak nung epidemic curve na tinatawag para hindi ma-overwhelm yung ating health system. Pero when you flatten the curve, ay pinapalawak mo rin ito. So lalong tatagal yung panahon kung saan kailangan nung mag-implement ng mga interventions tulad ng social distancing, physical distancing, and others. So ganun, so may ganun klaseng trade-off between the economy on the one hand and the overall objective of flattening the curve. So when we flatten the curve more, the harder the economic downturn that you can expect. So itong graph na to, mula sa isang recent na pag-aaral, pinapakita yon. So meron ka makikita ng mga red na linya, sa taas yun yung epidemic curve, yun yung pagtaas ng bilang ng mga bagong kaso ng coronavirus. Tapos sa ilalim, pinapakita nun, yung red din na linya sa ilalim, pinapakita kung ano yung economic downturn na magaganap. So when you flatten the curve, so ginagawa natin mula sa red papunta sa blue, so kukunti yung bagong kaso ng coronavirus, yung mas mababa na blue na linya dyan. Pero in the process, makikita mo yung blue na linya sa ilalim ay lalong lalalim. In other words, mas lalala yung economic crisis. So ganun, may ganung klaseng trade-off na na-discover yung mga ekonomista with their models. At sinasabi naman ng mga organization like the IMF na nagsimula na yung global recession. So anong recession? Recession ay sunod-sunod na dalawang quarter ng economic downturn. At sinasabi nila na malamang sa malamang ay nagsimula na ito. At yung NEDA rin, yung National Economic and Development Authority, sinasabi din na yung ekonomiya ng Pilipinas ay may possibility na yung paglago nito as measured by GDP growth ay maaring bumaba from around 5.9% last year, bababa siya to around 4.3%. Pero even may ganung may possibility din na instead of lumaki ay mag-shrink pa yung Philippine economy by as much as 0.6%. So ito yung kauna-unahang recession na magaganap kung sakali since the Asian financial crisis. At talagang malawak na economic downturn ang inaasahan natin. Yung ADB, Asian Development Bank, ay meron ding pag-aaral recently. Anong mga sectors ang maapektuhan? So marami silang mga scenarios mula sa best case, mula sa hypothetical worst case. Pero makikita mo dun sa kanan na halos lahat ng industriya ay maapektuhan mula sa business, trade, and personal and public services, sa hotels and restaurants, sa transport services, and even sa agriculture. Kasi kung makita mo sa balita, meron yung mga farmers na yung mga tinda nilang gulay ay hindi nila maibenta kasi hindi sila makalabas sa kanilang barangay or bayan at walang bibili ng kanilang mga produkto. Maging yung mga fishermen din ay namumblema kasi makita mo rin sa news na, for example, yung mga nagbibenta ng tuna na dati ay 350 per kilo ay naging 50 pesos per kilo na lang. So even yung sector ng agriculture ay maapektuhan itong coronavirus. So wala talaga makakaligtas. So ganun yung konsepto ng freezing the economy. So alam natin na mayroong economic downturn na magaganap. So kailangan ng tao ng tulong. Pero anong klaseng tulong ang kailangan nila at paano nila ito makuha? Dito papasok yung issue ng social protection. So yung social protection, defined na as understood by NEDA, ito yung mga programs and policies that seek to reduce poverty and vulnerability to risk and enhance the social status and rights of the marginalized. So basically, gusto natin protektahan yung mga tao, especially yung mga mahihirap, dun sa bad luck. Kasi for example, nawalan sila ng trabaho or nagkaroon sila ng bad harvest. So merong possibility na wala silang kitain at kung wala silang kikitain, wala silang kakainin at magugutom sila. So gusto nating iwasan yung ganong klaseng possibilities throughout the economy by introducing yung mga safety nets at ibang social protection programs para just in case mangyari yung sa kanila ay hindi sila mahihirapan masyado. So if you are familiar with the John Rawls, merong itong konsepto ng social protection ay merong distinct roles and flavor. So sinabi ni John Rawls na tinan natin yung perspektibo ng mga pinakamahihina sa lipunan na kapag hindi mo alam kung ikaw ay magiging mayaman or mahirap, gusto mong as much as possible, may possibility na maging mahirap ka, ay gusto mo na bigyan as much as possible yung mahirap ng kung anumang protection ang kailangan nila kung hindi mo alam sarili mo kung saan ka mapupunta na income class. Ito klaseng konsepto itong social protection. Itong NEDA, meron siya.
Yeah. Sir JC, question ko. Can you characterize vulnerability? What does it mean to be vulnerable in this sense?
Yeah, so important yung tanong yan. Itong NEDA, meron siyang medyo unwieldy diagram sa isa sa mga report niya. Ano yung konsepto ng social protection? So pinapakita dito na yung objective ay better and improve quality of life. At ang dalawang sangay nun ay reduce poverty and vulnerability, tapos inclusion and enhancement of the social status and rights of the marginalized. So when you are vulnerable, maraming klaseng vulnerability. So for example, life cycle and individual risks. So for example, kung ikaw ay bata or matanda na hindi ka umaasa ka, dependent ka sa mga breadwinners, for example, ay medyo mas vulnerable ka kaysa sa mga nagtatrabaho. Economic risks, environmental and natural risks, pag may mga sakuna, may mga bagyo, etc. At ito na nga, tung coronavirus, for example, isang klase ng environmental risk na dahil sa virus. Tapos meron ding social and governance risk. So maraming klase ng risk ang kailangan nating bantayan, at marami din yung mga programs na pwedeng implement pagdating sa social protection. So for instance, social insurance, labor market intervention, social safety net, and social welfare, daan na natin sila ngayon. Well, later. So dito sa Pilipinas, makikita na may mga panahon naman na tumataas yung paggastos natin sa social protection programs. Medyo naglalaro siya sa 1% of GDP, pero makita mo na from 2013 hanggang 2014 and onwards ay bumaba yung share ng gastos ng gobyerno sa social protection, at hindi ito masyadong umaangat. Okay? Now, ano yung mga klase ng social protection programs na meron tayo sa Pilipinas? So for example, ang pinakasikat dyan yung 4Ps, yung Pantawid Pamilyang Pilipino Program. Ito yung conditional cash transfers na tinatawag, na bibigyan ka ng pera kapag yung anak mo ay pinadala mo sa eskwelahan or sa health center ng inyong bayan. So ganun, so conditional cash transfers. And then meron din yung PhilHealth. So ito yung National Health Insurance Program pag ikaw ay nagpa-doktor or na-hospital. Ano yung matatanggap mo na suporta? Kalahitid dito, matagal na program na ito. Arroyo Administration pa to. Community-driven development. GSIS, of course, ang mga kawani ng gobyerno, and then SSS, yung counterpart niya sa private sector. Itong DLIP na to ay DOLE, na Emergency Employment Program, para kung sino yung biglang mga kailangan ng trabaho, yung na-layoff, ano yung pwede natin ibigay sa kanila na opportunity. And then Sustainable Livelihood Program, meron din. Pero kung makikita mo dito sa graph na ito ay yung Pilipinas, gano'ng kalaki yung natatanggap natin ng average na social protection assistance, medyo mababa compared sa ibang bansa na naglalaro lang ito sa 10% ng total consumption expenses ng pinakamahihirap na pamilya. So kulang talaga yung binibigay natin as is. And then, pumasok pa itong coronavirus na makita mo talaga na kulang na nga tayo dati. Eh tapos ngayon, lalo pa magkukulang kasi halos lahat ng tao sa ekonomiya ay kailangan ng tulong. So, sa tulong dito sa coronavirus, sino yung kailangan ng tulong? Unang-una, syempre yung workers. So, yung mga workers na walang hand-to-mouth. So, yung mga no work, no pay. Hindi makapasok sa kanilang mga trabaho, pero syempre kailangan nila maghanap ng
Sorry, cut off.
Ang gobyerno, yung wages and salaries ng mga gawang ito. Pwede rin yung unconditional cash transfers na instead of merong condition ay unconditional. The virus nung sa panahon na wala ng PCs. So, zero interest.
Sir,
yeah.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry, medyo naputol ko.
Sige. Sana ko naputol.
Ano, medyo. Do you guys remember saan banda naputol? I think sa may unconditional cash transfers.
Ah, okay.
Somewhere along that part. Yes.
Okay, sige. So, ayan. So, unconditional cash
transfers. We can pick up from there.
So, rather na may condition ay wala na, bibigyan mo lang talaga sila ng pera. Okay? And then, meron din yung loan payment extension kasi, syempre, meron silang bills to pay at meron silang, for example, mga pangungutang na dati mga utang, paano nila babayaran yun? Hayaan muna natin na huwag silang magbayad. Bigyan natin sila ng mga extension. Pati yung renta sa bahay, syempre, sa nila kukunin yung pera, bigyan din natin sila ng extension sa pagdating sa renta. And then, yung zero interest loan, so, pautangin natin sila, yung mga workers, pero wag natin lagyan ng interest. Para lang may pera sila ngayon, hanggang sa panahon na wala ng quarantine or wala ng crisis. So, kailangan lang talaga natin silang itawid mula sa panahon na walang crisis, na may crisis hanggang sa panahon na wala ng crisis. So, zero interest loans. And then, unemployment insurance. Kapag sila ay na-layoff ng kanilang mga boss sa trabaho kasi gipit din yung kanilang yung business kung saan sila nagtatrabaho. Kapag mawala sila ng trabaho, bigyan natin sila ng pera. Ito sa US, sikat itong unemployment insurance, uso ito, maraming naka-avail. Pero sa Pilipinas, meron din pero limited lang. Kasi for example, kung ikaw ay membro ng SSS, I think pwede ka rin mag-apply ng unemployment insurance. Pero para sa marami nating mga gawa, hindi available itong unemployment insurance. Especially those sa mga informal sector workers, yung mga may-ari ng karinderya, yung mga pedicab drivers, tricycle drivers, etc. Walang ganitong klaseng option for them. Itong susunod na graph ay medyo striking ito kasi sinabi ko nga na mayroong unemployment insurance sa US at itong mga nakaraang linggo ay talagang pumalo pataas yung bilang ng mga tao sa Amerika na nagka-claim itong unemployment assistance lang ay mahigit 6 million na mga gawa ang nawala ng trabaho at nag-apply ng unemployment insurance. Kung mapapansin mo, pinakamataas ito since at least 2004 dito sa graph na to. Pero in all likelihood, baka hanggang doon pang Great Depression ay ganito na yung, ganun siya, para siyang record high. So mabuti sa kanila, meron silang ganyang klaseng option, unemployment insurance, pero sa Pilipinas, parang wala kasi tayong ganitong klaseng option. So So, nung nag-implement si President Duterte ng lockdown, meron pa mga sinasabi yung gobyerno na, so, syempre, yung mga informal workers, yung mga nagtitinda, paano sila magtitinda sa Maynila kung nakatira sila sa labas ng Metro Manila? Sinabi ng DTI, Department of Trade and Industry, doon daw muna sila magbenta sa labas ng Maynila. Pero, so, you can imagine na, syempre, kaya nga sila nasa Maynila kasi wala sa probinsya nila. So, malaking dagok ito sa mga informal workers na they transit in and out of Metro Manila for work. Now, yung workers, syempre, yung fate nila nakatali doon sa fate ng businesses. So, yung businesses din ay kailangan din ng tulong kasi mamawalan sila ng customers sa mga susunod na linggo tsaka buwan. Eh, samantalang meron silang mga bills din to pay. So, for example, yung renta, yung kuryente, tubig, etc. Yung mga loans nila. So, itong businesses, pwede din natin silang, kailangan din natin sila bigyan ng assistance. So, for example, bigyan natin sila ng grants or bailouts. So, for example, may mga specific sectors na nanghihingi ng bailouts. Ito yung mga businesses na nanganganib na magsara, pero bigyan mo sila ng pera para hindi sila magsara. Pero may mga nagsasabi na sa mga malalaking kumpanya, parang hindi naman medyo akma na gastosan natin sila ng malalaking halaga na parang libreng pera. So instead of that, ay bigyan din natin sila ng loans. Tulad ng kanina, zero interest din para lang maitawid na itong crisis. Tapos pwede muna din natin silang bigyan ng mga bill payment extensions, etc., tax payment or yung extension ng pag-file ng buwis, CBIR. nung una ayaw pa niyang i-extend yung deadline ng pag-file ng buwis . Pero eventually na-pressure din, so in-extend nila. So in-extend nila. pwede din natin sila ang bigyan ng tax credit. So for example, if mag-promise sila na hindi nila bibitawan yung kanilang workers, bigyan natin sila ng pera or tax credit. Kumbaga, you're incentivizing them not to lay off their workers. Now, problema ko kayo na 99% or mahigit ng ating mga formal establishments ay micro, small, or medium enterprises. So, so ito yung mga businesses ng total value ay 100 million pababa. At 99% sila ng formal establishment. So, meron nagsabi, may nagsulat sa Philippine Star na isa ticking time bomb. Kasi habang sila yung pinaka-vulnerable pagdating dito sa crisis na ito, at marami ang magsara kapag hindi natin sila tinulungan. So, si Andrew Marasigan, meron siyang article sa Philippine Star, sinabi niya na problema sa kanila yung lack of preparation and poor messaging ng gobyerno kasi litong-lito sila kung ano ba yung mga polisiya ng gobyerno pagdating sa lockdown, for example. Yung mga supplies nila, hindi nila makuha. Yung mga delivery trucks ay hindi makadaan sa mga checkpoint. Tapos yung mga container van ay naipit sa mga ports. So, nahirapan yung business nila. And then at the same time, pautay-utay yung pagbigay ng gobyerno ng mga instruction, rules, and regulations when it comes to the lockdown. So, litong-lito sila. So, sabi ni Andrew Marasigan, for MSMEs in particular, pwede nating bawasan yung kanilang renta or gawin itong proportional sa kung ano yung sales na, kung ano yung benta nila throughout the lockdown. Pwede din nating i-freeze yung pagtaas ng minimum wage na binibigay nila sa kanilang mga empleyado. Ihinto muna natin yun. So pwede din natin silang bigyan ng 3-month loan amortization holiday. So ganun, so marami yung mga option para tulungan natin yung MSMEs. Ang Rappler, meron kaming article tungkol dito, as lockdown grinds on, small restaurants worry about staying afloat. So this captures, I think, yung problema ng mga businesses. And then, sinasabi din na itong crisis sa coronavirus ay tinatamaan din ito yung mga global supply chains. So ano ba yung global supply chains? Ngayon kasi ay yung mga produkto ay hindi na lang ginagawa sa isang lugar, kundi ginagawa sa maraming mga bansa. So for example, sinasabi yung China, isa sa mga major manufacturing countries, marami sa mga produktong ginagamit natin ay partly ginawa sa China. Pero pag nagsara yung China, mahihirapan yung mga lahat ng mga industriya na nakadepende dun sa kung ano man yung ginagawa nila. So pinapakita nitong network graph na to na kapag ka nagsara si China, for example, dahil dun sa coronavirus, sila yung unang, dun nang galing yung coronavirus, ay maraming mga supply chains ang naputol sa maraming industriya, for example, for textiles or ito naman for ICT goods. So ito, so nabanggit ko kanina yung tungkol sa mga ports. So marami na daw mga food cargo ang naiipit sa Port of Manila at hindi makaalis doon. Tapos sinasabi nga na baka i-take over na lang ng gobyerno yung mga kargamento na hindi i-claim ng mabilis. So medyo kailangan nating pabilisin yung paggalaw ng mga supplies para para meron tayong kainin. Tsaka para meron tayong tuloy-tuloy yung mga kung ano man yung kailangan natin for our bare survival dito sa lockdown nito. Ang nakakalungkot dito ay sinabi ni Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez III na yung tulong para sa mga firms, it will take a backseat daw. Maganda naman na unahin natin yung mga workers at yung mahihirap, pero at the same time, I think hindi ito hadlang para tulungan din natin at the same time yung mga businesses. Kasi ayaw natin na umabot sa punto na magsara itong mga businesses na ito kasi later wala ka nang i-stimulate na ekonomiya kapag marami sa mga businesses ay nasara na. So we have to keep them afloat in the meantime. And then of course, yung mahihirap. So sila yung pinakamatamaan nito. So ano yung pwede nating tulong na ibigay sa kanila? Pwedeng unconditional cash transfers, tulad ng nabanggit ko kanina. At may nagsasabi din na baka panahon na para isipin natin yung universal basic income. Ano ba tong UBI na to? Basically, lahat ng Pilipino bibigyan lang ng pera. Okay, a fixed amount na kailangan natin for our bare survival. So lahat tayo makakatanggap. Ang maganda kasi dito ay hindi mo na kailangan i-target. Kasi unlike yung mga conditional cash transfers, mamumblema ka pa na ibukod kung sino yung mahirap o kung sino yung mayaman. Pero with universal basic income, lahat ng tao bibigyan para madali nating maiparating yung kailangan nila na pera. Kami sa Rappler, meron din kami article na to. So, poor Filipinos fear death from hunger more than coronavirus. So, marami. So, this is a real concern. Maraming mga mahihirap na hindi sila natatakot sa virus, na mamatay sa virus, kundi mamatay sa gutom. Essentially. And then, bago pa nung early days nung lockdown, sinasabi na yung DSWD ay baka i-scale back pa yung mga programs niya. Tulad ng social pension for senior citizens or yung pagbibigay ng four-piece benefits na hindi sa ATM mo makukuha. So, I think ito yung panahon kung kailan dapat i-expand natin, i-beef up natin rather than scale down yung tulong mula sa DSWD. Yung sa bayanihan mo na sinabi ni President Duterte, pinirmahan niya, makakatanggap yung 18 million na households sa Pilipinas nitong April at May ng amount na hindi bababa sa 5,000 pesos per household at hindi lalagpas ng 8,000. So ito yung breakdown na pinapakita ko. So Metro Manila, kapag ikaw ay taga Metro Manila, 8,000 pesos ang matatanggap mo. Pag ikaw ay Central Luzon, taga Central Luzon or Calabarzon ay 6,500, etc. So proportional siya dun sa namamayanin na regional wage rate kung nasaan ka. Pero ang problema ay, yun nga, so may ganitong klaseng tulong na paparating, pero binabalangkas pa lang ng gobyerno yung database kung saan gagamitin ito yung database para i-target yung mga pagbibigyan. At sinabi naman na parating na yung 100 billion ng emergency subsidy para sa mahihirap, pero yun, so dahil sa mga logistical problems ay baka matagalan pa to. So, lahat ng
If ever not, there are just some questions here, but it's up to you when you want to answer it, especially during the duration of the lecture. So, the ball is on your
court. Sure,
thank you.
You can take some questions. Hindi ko lang makita kasi naka full screen ako.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Ito, meron po may mga tanong related to UBI.
Yeah.
So
okay, sure.
So we can pause quickly. So going back to universal basic income, no. So as you said, everyone is given a fixed amount, and it's good because technically there's no need for targeting. Tanong po ni Ryan Opinion, may estimates po ba kayo on how much government budget will be needed for UBI? Idel Rosario has the same question.
Yeah. So
and mabibigyan po ba lahat.
Oo, universal. So lahat, hopefully. So universal. So, well, ito ay medyo hindi pa talaga pinag-uusapan. I think meron akong narinig na for some economic managers ay medyo kinoconsider na nila ito. Pero I'm not sure kung unang-una ay roll out nila ito agad at pangalawa kung may pera tayo for it. Basically, kailangan mo lang i-multiply kung magkano yung tanggap ng isang tao, for example, 5,000 pesos per month times kung ilan yung Pilipino, so 108 million. So roughly around that. So, well, some people are saying na at least for the duration of the coronavirus crisis ay gawin natin temporary. So hindi pa permanent. So para lang maitawid natin yung mga tao mula ngayon hanggang sa wala ng crisis ay bigyan natin ng, i-pursue natin si universal basic income. And then later natin i-consider kung pwede natin gawing mas permanent. And many other countries are also considering making it permanent.
I see, get it from the billionaires. I'm just kidding. Okay. Ayan, may tanong naman po from Erwin Belen. How about the food lane being implemented by DA? This one is related to supply chain. Not sure if this is something you think we can answer right now or maybe we can put it for later.
I'm not sure kung ano exactly yung involved sa food lane, pero I think importante siya na let's make it easier for food cargo to go through the different cities and municipalities. Kasi ito talaga yung pangangailangan ng mga tao. Kumbaga, doon sa mga for certain deliveries, ay gawin natin mas madali na dumaan sa mga checkpoint. I think yun yung purpose nung food lane.
Okay. Alright. Sige po. Ayan, so sir addressed questions regarding the UBI and some things that our government needs to do in order to prevent blocking supply chains. Okay, sir, you can move forward.
Okay.
As you wish.
So I mentioned assistance for workers, businesses, and the poor. So gaano kalaki yung amount na kailangan natin in total? Si mga professor from the UP School of Economics, meron silang white paper na pinublish recently kasama si Alfredo Paloyo of University of Wollongong sa Australia. Inestimate nila na kailangan ng at least 100 billion pesos hanggang 300 billion pesos to protect our people, avert a recession, and arrest the misery that COVID-19 will bring. So that's one estimate. Sila Professor Ducanis naman, si Professor Ducanis naman ng Ateneo, well, dati siyang UP. And then yung asawa niya si Sara Daway Ducanis, and then si Ma'am Edita Tanak, UP. Meron din silang recent na working paper kung saan nag-focus sila dun sa plight of the poorest of the poor. So yung poorest 30% ng mga households, inestimate nila na may 2.4 million na highly vulnerable families throughout Luzon. At kailangan ng gobyerno ng at least 17.7 billion per month for of lockdown for their basic needs. So medyo maliit pa nga to, pero ito kasi ay nag-focus sa highly vulnerable. Pero if you include yung assistance for businesses and workers in general, you can easily imagine na baka around the vicinity of 100 billion to 300 billion nga. Ayan, So, kailangan ng pera para tulungan yung mga tao. So, ano yung klase ng policies? Ano yung itsura ng policies ng gobyerno to make this happen? So, dito papasok yung role of government in assisting the people. Now, when you talk about role of government in macroeconomics, kung merong economic crisis, ano yung pwede niyang gawin? So, there are two things from the textbooks. Number one, fiscal policy. Ito yung pag-gastos yung gobyerno, basically, para mas-relate yung economy. And then number two, monetary policy. Yung central bank, in our case, yung Banko Sentral ng Pilipinas or BSP, pwede siya mag-implement ng policies to shore up the economy. Pero, itong COVID-19 crisis, this is not your usual economic crisis. Kasi natamaan nito, hindi lang yung supply, pati yung demand. Demand kasi walang mga taong bumibili sa labas. And then supply dahil yung mga produkto ay hindi ma-produce. Dahil nga yung mga trabahante ay nasa bahay, yung mga supply chains ay disrupted. So both demand and supply. Now when it comes to fiscal monetary policy, these usually try to support aggregate demand. Pero hindi, this is not your usual fiscal policy, expansionary fiscal policy to boost demand. In other words, gagastos yung gobyerno para yung demand sa ekonomiya ay tumaas. This is not your usual type of Keynesian stimulus named after John Maynard Keynes. Kasi ang gusto natin mangyari ay to freeze the economy nga. In other words, kapag kahit nabigyan mo ng pera yung mga tao, hindi naman sila lalabas para bumili sa mga mall, etc. Hanggang may virus na kakalat. So, ang gusto natin gawin instead ay, yun nga, to feed the economy, tapos bigyan natin sila ng pera to survive, bigyan natin yung mga tao ng pera to survive, and then later natin stimulate yung economy kapag ka pwede nang magbukas ulit yung mga businesses, yung mga formal establishments, etc. Yung UP professor.
Sir, question.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Pwede niyo po i-clarify, ano po yung ibig sabihin ng stimulus in economic context?
Uh-oh. So stimulus, so basically, if you think of yung mga economic crisis in the past, for example, sa US, merong Great Depression, and then sa Pilipinas, ang worst economic crisis natin was back in the mid-1980s. Ito yung economic crisis during the martial law era. One way to bring back the economy to life ay to stimulate demand. In other words, engganyuhin mo yung mga tao na bumili ng mga bagay. So, for example, bumili ng mga, pumunta sa mga restaurant para kumain, or bumili ng mga appliances, bumili ng kotse, bumili ng bahay, ng kondo, etc. At kapag magastos sila, ay, alam natin sa basic econ, ay merong mga kikita ng pera na yun. So, in other words, bubuhay natin ekonomiya to stimulate yung ganong klaseng spending. Okay, pero dito sa coronavirus crisis natin, ay hindi mo basta-basta kasi ma-stimulate yung economy in that way. And in fact, ayaw mo nga na lumabas yung mga tao para bumili ng mga ano-anong bagay. Gusto mong mag-stay sila sa ilang bahay, manatili sila doon para hindi kumalat yung virus. So life support, you are putting the economy in life support. Yung UP professors, sinabi nila, this is not a fiscal stimulus. We don't need a fiscal stimulus package. Okay, kailangan natin social insurance package to put the economy in life support. Parang disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Kasi if you think of disaster relief, parang it captures somehow yung problema na meron tayo ngayon eh. Now, when it comes to monetary policy naman, the Bangko Sentral can also try to stimulate the economy by, for example, lowering the interest rate, yung key policy rate niya. Kasi lahat ng interest rate sa economy susunod pababa. At kapag mas mababa yung interest rate, ay gaganahan ka na bumili ng kotse, ng kondo, ng bahay, etc. Pero again, you don't need that right now. What you need is some sort of economic, disaster relief. So, sa social... Hello?
Yes?
Okay. Sige. So, sa social media, marami nang tatanong, nasa daw yung 275 billion, okay? So, na pinangako, nagagastusin para sa response ng gobyerno, para sa coronavirus crisis. Pero the real answer is, we don't know yet. Itong 275 ay isang mga numero na lumulutang, pero nung sa eventual law, ay wala talagang specific amount na sinabi. Ano ba yung mga plano ng gobyerno? So, unang-unang March 16 ay sinabi nila, President Duterte, tsaka yung team niya, gagastos sila ng 27.1 billion. Ang nakakatawa dito ay karamihan nun ay para sa tourism. So yung tourism, syempre, maapektuhan sila. Pero of course, gusto mo naman din na tulungan din unahing gastusan yung mga frontliner natin. For example, na kailangan ng personal protective equipment, tsaka ng mga respirator para i-combat yung coronavirus. So, and this was during the time na medyo na underestimate pa yata nila yung gravity of the situation. Kasi hindi lang tourism yung major na maapektuhan, kundi halos lahat ng sectors sa economy. And then, Representative Stella Kimbo, na by the way ay dating prof sa UP School of Economics, meron din siyang pinakala na 108 billion na economic rescue plan. So, paano niya hinati yun? Buti pa siya may breakdown. So, sabi niya, 50 billion ay natin sa business loans na sinabi natin kanina, 43 billion para sa tourism, and then 15 billion para sa displaced workers. So, at least, ganong klase ng itemization or breakdown ang gusto natin makita na may ganong amount na ilalaan para sa ganitong sector. Now, yung 275 billion ay galing ito doon sa mga original proponents nung Banihan to Hilas 1 Act na gusto sanang bigyan si President Duterte ng emergency powers. Pero nung tinatanong sila during the interpellation ay wala silang maibigay na breakdown. Basta 275 billion gagastusin namin to follow na lang daw yung breakdown. Now, eventually...
Bakit ganun?
Well, oo, tanong ko rin yan. So, gusto nga natin, kasi syempre, hindi naman biro-biro yung ganitong lasing amounts na eventually, ang pupuno dito ay yung taong bayan din naman. So, may karapatan din naman yung mga tao to know kung saan mapupunta yung pera at kung magagastos ba ito ng mabuti. Now, doon sa eventual...
Sir, may I insert?
Sure.
Sorry. It's hard to give facial signals just online. So, I'm sorry if it sounds very abrupt. But we are talking about budget right now and what kind of spending the government needs to be doing. Just would like to address some questions for the side as we move along. From Ma'am Zar, Medina Gusa, she asked at 8:45 p.m., just for your reference. She said, yeah. LGUs are beginning to surface the problem that the fund estimates do not match the data of beneficiaries locally. Is it possible to further stretch the current allocation? Since we're on a BSP bailout.
Oo. So, yung kasing emergency subsidy, isa to sa mga bagay na medyo klaro dun sa Bayanihan Law. Kasi sinabi specifically na between 5,000 pesos hanggang 8,000 pesos per family. So, if you multiply that by 18 million, ay you can expect to spend around 180 billion to around 288 billion. And then add to that, mga 5.1 billion for the administrative cost para i-hand out itong emergency subsidy. So, ayun. So, hindi ko pa na talaga nakita. So, yun nga yung problema kasi, actually, we'll get to that later. Kung ano yung mga so, we're comparing kung ano yung kailangan na pera versus yung pera na kailangan natin, saan yan natin kukunin. We can actually go through that later.
Okay.
So anyway, ayan. So,
right.
Merong 200 billion na sinabi si President Duterte doon sa isa sa mga late night addresses niya. So, pero wala pa talagang specific, okay, na talagang written down. Now, Mr. Bayanihan lo, nakalagay doon that the President must report weekly, every Monday, kung ano yung, kung paano ginastos yung pera na malilikong. Malilikom niya. Pero do sa so far do sa report ay wala pang ganung klaseng breakdown. Meron mga list of activities pero tulong pinost ko kanina, hindi kasi natin kailangan ng list of activities eh. Kailangan natin na merong specific na target na gagastosin tapos kung ipapakita kung ano yung mga proyekto na na-allocate o nagastos para do sa ganung klaseng purpose para makita mo talaga kung epektibo yung paggastos ng gobyerno. So ito yung tinatawag na MNE or Monitoring and Evaluation. Basic to actually. Sana makita natin ito sa mga susunod na report. Now, punta tayo dun sa issue na kung saan mga galing yung pera. Well, the good news is, potentially, marami tayong pwedeng pagkunan. Unang-una dun sa taxes, and then dun sa savings, and then dun sa loans. So dun sa taxes, aminado tayo na we're freezing the economy nga eh. So, wala talagang income yung mga tao. So, yung tax income, kumbaga, ay hindi mo talaga ma-expect na marami yan this year. So, in fact, si Department of Finance, sinasabi na baka bumaba yung tax revenues by around 91 billion pesos. Pero sinabi naman ni Secretary Dominguez na meron daw 200 billion pesos from previous measures like the train law. Pero kailangan pang i-verify yun. Hindi ko pa nakita talaga yung numbers. Now, a second possible source would be savings. So, under the Bayanihan Law, ay inauthorize si President Duterte para maglikom ng savings. So, mag-realign, mag-reprogram, reallocate, or realign ng mga savings, ng mga pwedeng pagkunan ng savings. Kung maalala mo dun sa pork barrel issue, actually, bawal sa batas na mag-reprogram ng mga budget items. Pero when you frame it as savings, ay mas ay posible siya under the current law. At sinasabi na, wala pang ganong klaseng itemization again. Doon sa wala pang plano kung paano balak i-reprogram ni President Duterte yung ibang mga projects. For example, ihinto muna natin yung mga ilang infrastructure projects doon sa build para may pera tayo para dito sa coronavirus issue. Pero up to now, ay hinihintay pa natin yung ganong klaseng mga reprogramming at saka reallocation, etc. So, sinabi rin ni Secretary Dominguez na merong mga around 200 billion daw of cash or cash equivalents na pwedeng pagkunan from the national government and the GOCCs or government-owned and controlled or controlled corporations. And then finally, loans. So, ganito yung mga paraan para maglikom ng pera ang gobyerno. So, taxes and then savings and then loans. Yung loans, si Secretary Dominguez daw ay in talks now with the World Bank, ADB, Asian Development Bank, and Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank ng around $1 billion to $2 billion. So around 50 billion to 100 billion depende sa terms. So that's a lot of money as well. And yung gobyerno din through the Treasury ay nagbebenta din siya ng securities every once in a while. In fact, on a regular schedule. At for April, sinasabi ni National Treasurer na umaasal sila na around 190 billion in additional funds doon sa sale nila ng government securities. Although, ang problema dito ay yung demand from investors ay maliit din in recent weeks. So, alanganin pa yan. Pero ang by far yung pinakamalaking source possibly ng pera ay yung liquidity infusion ng Bangko Sentral. So, yung Bangko Sentral ay bumili ng government securities from the national government worth 300 billion. So, ang laking infusion ito ng pera na parang bigla na lang out of the blue ay biglang may 300 billion pala tayo. So, maganda ito kasi ang kailangan natin ay agarang pagbigay kasi ng assistance sa mga tao. So, mabuti na sinasabi na remit na daw itong 300 billion sa Treasury at merong pera kung ang kung yun ang problema natin. Meron tayong pera actually. Ang problema ay paano ito gagastusin, hindi pa klaro. So, kung i-add mo itong mga nilista ko dito na possible funding sources, ay halos 1 trillion pesos actually ang possible na pondo ng gobyerno to address the coronavirus issue. So, 1 trillion pesos is a substantial sum to say the least. So meron at merong pera. Pero ang mas malaking issue, I think, ay yung paano ito gagastusin. Kasi tulad ng sinabi ko, ay wala pang klarong budget or wala pang klaro na itemization or breakdown kung ano yung mga sektor na makakatanggap ng tulong tsaka magkano yung inalaan dito. And then of course, meron yung issue ng finances ng gobyerno kasi ito sinulat rin sa Rappler na apparently do sa last quarter of 2019 ay yung budget deficit, ito yung kakulang, yung diferensya ng kita ng gobyerno tsaka yung gastos nito ay pumalo ng 6.8% nung last quarter, nung last 3 months of 2019, ito yung pinakamataas simula nung 1998 or at least dun sa available na data. So, in other words, kapag mataas ang budget deficit mo ay mas malaki yung ginastos mo kesa dun sa kinita mo, okay? At pumalo ngayon sa pinakamataas since 1998. So, ang target kasi ng gobyerno around 3.2% lang. Pero last year, sa kabuuan ng last year, umabot na ng 3.55%. So lumagpas na tayo dun sa target ng gobyerno. At yun nga, meron tayong historic high nung last quarter of 2019. Kung i-breakdown mo yun, saan ang galing yun? Yung national government disbursements ay talagang bumalo siya. Nagbuho sila ng gastos nung November at December last year. As in, makikita mo sa graph na off the charts talaga siya. Talagang nag-skyrocket siya.
Wow.
So, kasi natin ay ma-manage, yun nga yung point ng, ng pag-manage ng coffers ng gobyerno, ayaw natin masyadong lumalaki yung budget deficit. We want to manage it kasi every additional period ng malaking deficit ay dumadagdag sa utang ng mga tao. At sino ba yung nagbabayad ng utang na yun ay yung taong bayan din. So, gusto natin na ma-manage yung deficit as much as possible. Now, when it comes to the loans, so asahan natin na maraming loans na uutangin para dito sa coronavirus issue. Ang sinasabi kasi ay meron naman daw fiscal space yung gobyerno. Ibig sabihin, afford natin na uutang. Kasi kung makita mo dito sa graph, ay bumaba na yung debt-to-GDP ratio natin since around the early 2000s, 60-70%, bumaba na siya ng hanggang around 40% lang. At medyo na-sustain naman natin siya throughout the Duterte administration, as you can see. So, kung tumaas man yan, well, actually okay lang kasi emergency naman talaga. So, kailangan gumastos ng gobyerno at wala siyang sapat na pera. So, tataas talaga yung deficit at tataas talaga yung utang natin. So, tanggapin na natin yun. Pero at least ay meron tayong sinasabi na fiscal space if ever kailangan nga natin na umutang ng malaki. Now, of course, malalaki ang pera na sinasabi natin, 200 billion, 300 billion. So, throughout the crisis, kailangan natin mag-demand ng transparency and accountability. Siguraduhin natin na yung paggastos ng gobyerno ay maayos at transparent at magiging klaro kung nagastos ba talaga ng tama yung pera na yun. This is something na sa US ay in-enter nila kasi kung mabalitaan ninyo ay ang US Congress ay nagpasa ng bill na $2 trillion. Napakalaking pera din nun na parang yung ginagawa natin dito sa Pilipinas. Pero sila nakaspecify na $2 trillion tapos may breakdown sila na maayos. At more than that ay nakalagay din dun na kailangan merong oversight na titingin talaga ang Congress kung nagasta ng mabuti yung pera. At yun yung gusto nating mangyari din dito sa Pilipinas. Pero ang balita ko, yung down oversight committee from yung members ng oversight committee ay mula doon sa House, ay yung sponsors din nung Bayanihan to Hilas One Act, sila Cayetano, etc. So, gustuin natin, siguraduhin natin na may totoong oversight. So, yun lang. So, in conclusion, so I guess magandang punto ito para pag-usapan kung kailan ba 'to matatapos. Kasi doon lahat nakadepende. Habang nandiyan pa yung virus, ay asahan mo na meron parang paring lockdown na magagana. So kailan ba 'to matatapos? Kailan na safe na tanggalin yung lockdown? Well, hindi pa natin talaga alam. So maraming variables kasi too many variables here. Ito ay sinulat ko din kasi meron in fact mga economic models na pinagsasama nila yung mga epidemiological models sa economic models. So ito, for example, pinapakita na ano ba yung ibig sabihin ng flattening the curve. So sinasabi dito na for the Philippines, ito ay estimate ni Dr. Rabahante from the UP Los Baños. Sinasabi niya na mag-peak siya mid-April yung bilang ng active case ng coronavirus, tapos mag-taper off lang siya around June na. So, ayan. So, medyo matagal-tagal pa daw. Okay. And then, on top of that, so, yung community quarantine, enhanced community quarantine na isang paraan para isuppress or i-flatten yung curve. Pero sinasabi na hanggang meron pang paisa-isang kaso ng coronavirus dyan, ay maaari itong sumabog ulit kapag binitawan natin or nirelax natin yung community quarantine. So sinasabi dito sa estimate niya, kapag nawala yung nilift yung enhanced community quarantine by April 14, ay tapos wala na tayong gawin, back to normal, business as usual, ay maaari sumabog ulit yung epidemic curve na tinatawag. So may mga nagsasabi na baka kailangan sunod-sunod na lockdown. So lockdown muna ngayon for mga almost a month, and then may pagitan na walang lockdown, and then lockdown ulit hanggang mawala yung virus. So ito yung isa sa mga options na maaring itignan nung IATF na siyang namumuno nitong effort against coronavirus. Pero yung flattening the curve, marami ding paraan para gawin yan. So dito sa studies ng Imperial College sa London,
Hello? Hi, sir. Sorry, medyo nating chat.
For entire populations, maraming mga pwedeng gawin to flatten the curve. Pero yun nga, ay baka kailangan sunod-sunod na lockdown at interventions hanggang wala pang vaccine. So, ang end game natin dito ay gusto nating makadevelop agad ang mga tao, mga siyentista ng vaccine. Kasi yun talaga yung sasagot dito sa, yun talaga yung susupo dito sa coronavirus. At hanggang wala pa yun, sinasabi mga at least 12 months to 18 months bago pa makagawa ng vaccine. At you can just imagine na dito sa Pilipinas ay baka mas matagal pa to vaccinate a majority of our population. So medyo matagal pa to, so let's brace ourselves. Okay, so in conclusion lang, so tulad ng sinabi ko kanina ay itong coronavirus, this is not your usual economic shock. At in fact, nagdulot ito ng worst economic crisis sa buong mundo, and including the Philippines, since, well, in many decades. Baka ito na yung new normal kasi baka may mga nagsasabi na yung virus ay baka maging kahalintulad siya ng seasonal flu na parang is out there lang, is out there, tapos meron lang seasons na may outbreak, tapos mawala din. So, kung ito yung new normal, when it comes to the social protection issue, kailangan medyo mas handa na tayo sa mga future lockdowns. So, at the same time, you're locking down the economy, shutting it down, putting it on life support, ay kailangan you also beef up yung social protection system para hindi naman magutom yung mga tao kasi nga, para hindi coronavirus ang papatay, kundi gutom. Now, isang punto din ay yung current system natin of social protection ay kulang pa talaga. So, if anything, itong crisis na to ay in-expose kung gaano kakulang pa yung social protection ng Pilipinas, marami pa rin gaps. And in the future, we can only hope na yung mga public institutions natin, gobyerno, etc., and then, of course, yung private sector ay magtulungan at mag-evolve sila para maging mas handa na sila for future epidemics. Okay, so if you want to learn more, marami na akong naisusulat tungkol sa coronavirus sa Rappler. So yeah, so in the coming weeks, marami pa yan. So that's one way to follow
wow.
news. And then meron pa-plug ko lang. So meron kaming podcast. So usapan ko 'tong podcast. In fact, kanina doon sa isang kwarto dito sa bahay, and nag-record ako ng voiceover ko doon sa isang episode namin on coronavirus. So meron kaming special series on the coronavirus. Yung isa ay uploaded na. So you can listen to it sa Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or other channels. And then meron pang susunod na episode. So watch out for that. And then sa Twitter, let's continue this conversation on Twitter. Yun lang. Thank you.
Ayan. Thank you so much, sir. Actually, I told you diba that I had questions prepared. Pero honestly, it was all pretty much answered. So, the focus is less on my prepared questions, but I'd like for us to make use of the remaining time, no, to address the questions that are coming up right now.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to the chat. Okay. So binanggit niyo po kanina na pwede nating balikan yung tanong ni Ma'am Zar. If there's something more that you can add. So she asked us to refer to the tweet of Gatchalian. I'm assuming this is the senator. Okay. So yun nga po, no? Is it possible to further stretch the current allocation since we're on a BSP bailout?
To stretch the current... Well, yun nga eh. So may mga issue kasi dyan kasi... up until yesterday, meron akong mga naririnig na meron daw liquidity problems ang national government natin na wala pa daw na-limit na masyadong pera from the BIR and the customs. At kung wala yung liquidity infusion ng Bangko Sentral, ay baka wala tayong pwedeng gastusin to fight the coronavirus. So, yun nga. So, yung infusion ng BSP ay around 300 billion. So, ang tanong doon ay, kasi emergency subsidy ay baka yun pa lang, kulang na yung 300 billion. Kung may bibigay nila lahat yun doon sa 18 million households na pinaplano nila. Pero, ayun, so, ito yung panahon kung saan kailangan yung gobyerno maging creative kung paano sila lilikom ng pera. At tulad ng sinabi ko ay maraming pwedeng pagkunan. Kung creative sila dun sa pag-realign, for example, ng mga savings from the 2020 budget, ay that's one way to cope and to raise funds over and above yung liquidity infusion ng Bangko Sentral. So ayun, so let's watch in the coming weeks and months kung paano nila ito gagawin. So, yun nga. So, gusto natin sila maging creative at innovative, pero wag naman sa punto na mauuwi sa corruption at at sa misuse of the funds. We don't want them to get too creative.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. Ramzar, may pahabol pa po ba kayo with that? Feel free to speak.
Hi, Ma'am Sar.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, question naman po from Ryan Opinion, 8:52 p.m. You have to see. So, tanong niya po, will Keynesian stimulus be integral in the long run after the lockdown or infection rate has subsided?
Yeah, so yung Keynesian stimulus ay that's one of the ways nga, as I mentioned, kung paano mo pwedeng i-combat yung economic decline. And certainly, well, right now, ang Philippine government, ang Philippine Congress, wala pa siya talagang stimulus package. And this is worth noting kasi yung Bayanihan to Heal Us One Act or Baho Act ay hindi talaga siya proper stimulus bill. At well, yun nga, may issue nga kung stimulus ba dapat ang tawag or economic rescue package. Pero certainly, Congress will have to sit down and pass a separate bill. At magandang model, magandang start yung sinasabi ni Ma'am Stella Kimbo na ganong klase na 108 billion and then i-itemize mo kung saan mapupunta yung 108 billion. Pero certainly yung 108 billion parang kulang pa yun talaga. Kasi sinasabi nga, may mga analysis na like the UP professors na sinasabi ay baka 300 billion ang mas akmang halaga. So you can expect na in the coming weeks ay baka ganung maglaro sa ganun yung mga pag-uusapan nila na stimulus or economic rescue package around the vicinity of 300 billion. So ayun, well, and then pwede nilang gawin na pautay-utay or yun nga, sunod-sunod na stimulus package. Na, well, not stimulus package, kundi economic rescue package can come in batches. So mag-pass sila muna in May and then another in June or July. Depende sa needs at depende kung paano nag-evolve yung coronavirus situation. Kung is on the decline na ba or hindi pa. So ganun, so may ganun kasi pag-usap yung kung anong nangyari on the one hand sa public health crisis and then on the other hand, kung ano yung economic response.
Okay. Are you good with that, Ryan? Are you still here? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, I take it as a yes. Okay. May binanggit po dito si AARP, that's the name. Keynesian stimulus can come later together with a BSP injection of liquidity, not during the lockdown. Okay. Yeah. Okay, question naman po from Tony C. at 8:53 p.m. With the amount of money we have, along with the 300 billion released by BSP, do you think we can sustain a freeze economy?
Ayun.
Kaya ba natin mag-Han Solo?
Yeah. So, yun nga. Tulad ng sinabi ko kanina, ay the more you flatten the curve, the deeper the economic downturn that you can expect. So, it all boils down to the government's ability to tide over millions of Filipinos in need of financial assistance. So, we have to brace for that kasi we don't know kung kailan pa ito matatapos, pero in the coming weeks and months, ay kailangan ma-refine na ng gobyerno, kailangan mas mabilis na siyang makapagbigay ng pera. At unang-una, kung sapat ba yung pera na ibibigay niya, and then pangalawa, kung gaano kabilis na ito pwedeng maibigay. Kasi for example, when it comes to yung emergency subsidy na sinasabing madaling paraan para tulungan yung mga tao ay dito sa comments ay yeah, si ARP ay isa sa mga author ng UPSE paper. Oh, si Palois yan. Hi Palois.
Hello po.
Nawala ako. Yun, so anyway, so
sorry.
Ayan, so ano na yung tanong?
Ayun, yun nga po, kaya mo sustain the freeze economy. So you mentioned na really have to start giving out money.
Uh-huh. Yun. So, yun nga. So, isa matter of kung gaano kalaki yung pera matatanggap na pwedeng asahan ng mga tao, tsaka kung gaano kabilis yun pwedeng nilang makuha. Kasi importante din kung yung infrastructure ay wala doon para maibigay yung pera ng mabilis, eh baka in the meantime, eh marami nang nagutom. In fact, ngayon, marami nang nagugutom sa mga, for example, you can see that sa mga urban poor communities na ang ulam na lang daw nila ay toyo, tsaka patis, tapos kanin, okay na sila doon. So, maraming ganun. So, gusto natin makarating agad yung pera, pero kailangan i-beef up nga nung gobyerno yung efforts ito para i-deliver yung ganong klaseng economic aid.
Okay. Ayan. Okay. Next naman po ay kay Miss Patricia Evite. She sent it at 8:59. So she has a question regarding the possible sources that you mentioned. Like, how can we actually get more access to foreign of aid? So sabi niya, can we justify additional external foreign debt to combat this virus, whether for health or social protection or stimulus?
Mm-hmm.
Justify external.
Yeah, so as I mentioned kanina, the government is already in talks with multilateral agencies like the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank for emergency loans. And I think these agencies naman are more than willing to extend financial assistance to the Philippine government. We have good relations with them anyway. So that shouldn't be a problem. So merong, I mean, ito yung panahon na medyo kailangan natin bitawan yung mga issue ng fiscal prudence, o kasi even in other countries, they expect that their governments are, well, governments left and right are in the process of coming up with huge economic aid packages. So, asahan mo na talaga yung budget deficit ng gobyerno ay tataas. I think may mga haka-haka, may mga notes, kasi may mga, apparently may mga meeting between government officials and yung mga business tycoons, and pinag-uusapan nila yung possibilities when it comes to the lifting of the enhanced community quarantine. Tapos, I think isa sa mga notes nila doon ay yung deficit, they are willing to tolerate a deficit of around 6% of GDP. And, well, that's well in excess of...
Sabi ko ni sir.
Hello? Hello?
Yes? Sorry, medyo na-cut ng slide.
Ah, okay. So, hindi. So,
hello.
Okay, diba?
Yes, yes, can hear you.
Ayan, so, okay na, may mga meetings daw between business tycoons and government officials, and they're talking about tolerating a higher budget deficit of around 6%. So, yung budget deficit target ng gobyerno ngayon is nasa around 3.2%, I think. So, yung 6% is quite sizable, but I think we can we should be ready to accept na lalaki talaga yung deficit as the government spends hundreds of billions of pesos in economic rescue.
And dinagdag po ni Sir Palois na debt to GDP with this package will put us around 6% of GDP. US package is 16%. Australia is 15%. A 6% debt to GDP is totally bearable, especially considering that everyone else will be in the same position. So technically, lahat po tayo magkakautangan. Sabi niya, yeah, correct daw Sir JC.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
oo. Which is,
ayan.
Which brings us to the point na mabuti na lang din na in the past administrations, ay medyo nang pababa nila yung debt to GDP ratio, kasi as I showed earlier, back in the early 2000s kasi we had a fiscal crisis, kasi yung debt to GDP ratio just kept on increasing from around 60% to 70%. Pero with the fiscal reform measures in the 2000s and then later, ay napababa natin yung debt to GDP ratio in the process giving us fiscal space. So fiscal space. And then, so in other words, we have more legroom now to spend beyond our means. So that's so buti na lang. Buti na lang meron tayong ganong klaseng fiscal space that we accrued throughout the past two decades.
I see. Your tanong lang po, I mean, personally, you know, how did we actually afford to have this fiscal space? How was that made possible?
Yeah, that's interesting kasi as I mentioned, meron yung UP School of Economics na white paper. Ito nga yung in-author nila Palois and other UPSC. No, si Palois ay galing sa Australia, pero graduate siya ng UPSC. So, UPSC din. So anyway, so itong white paper nila is interesting kasi very rare kasi na magkaroon ng white paper yung UP School of Economics. As in, many professors coming in and putting their names in one report. This is a very rare instance, yung coronavirus. In the 2000s, interestingly, they also wrote a white paper when it came to the fiscal crisis naman. Kasi ito yung early, I think it was published 2004. Kasi, as I mentioned, the debt to GDP, well, the budget deficit just kept on increasing beyond target, and at the same time, ay tumataas yung debt to GDP ratio, and that worried a lot of economists, even UP economists. At well, yun nga. So I think that white paper somehow inspired yung subsequent actions of the government. Kasi if you remember, 2004, meron yung VAT laws, yung value-added tax law, kung saan in-impose na 12%. It was politically difficult to pass. And in fact, medyo na-attach na yung VAT dun sa pangalan ni Ralph Recto na medyo may political toll siya kasi people don't want taxes. Pero it was at that time necessary to impose such a policy kasi yun nga, nagkakaroon ng trouble yung fiscal position ng gobyerno at hindi sustainable na ang lalaki ng gastos ng gobyerno tapos ang lit lang ng kinikita niya. So that's what that were credited for the creation of more fiscal space, yung tax reform measures in the 2000s. Naalala ko to kasi ito yung mga issue na pinag-usapan ng undergrad ako eh. So, pwede kung ano edad ko. Pero anyway, so yan. So interesting lang na, yun nga, so may bago tayong economic crisis ngayon. In fact, the worst economic crisis and economists are beginning to speak up to offer their insights, which is good.
Okay, that's a very interesting insight. Thank you to the people who responded to our problems in the early 2000s. We now have fiscal space. Okay, tanong naman po ni Alex B at 9:10 p.m. Ayan, speaking of gutom, sir. My, in terms of food security, how necessary is importation of rice, given that we have local rice farmers competing with rice importers? She sent an article here to attach. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yun. So, well, we have to link this to the rice tariffication law, which was signed Valentine's Day last year. So the rice tariffication law somehow partially liberalized yung rice market natin kasi for the longest time there was a monopoly of importation of rice and the monopoly is the National Food Authority or NFA. So ang ginawa ng rice tariffication is it did away with the monopoly of NFA in rice importation, so anyone now can import rice as long as they are willing to pay the requisite tariff or import tax. So, ang nangyari ay, well, it was somehow expected na it really boosted yung importation of rice. Kasi masyadong limited before the rice tariffication law. So, ang problema ngayon ay masyadong mababa yung presyo ng bigas, especially at the farm gate. So bago ito mapunta sa mga traders and millers, for example, ay ang baba ng presyo ng palay. And that hurt the incomes of millions of or hundreds of thousands of our local farmers. And then now, with the coronavirus issue, more countries are, I think, limiting their exportation of rice like Vietnam or other rice exporting countries. Eh, at some point, after the rice tariffication law, we were in fact one of the top rice importers. Eh, ngayon, walang nabawasan yung pwede natin pagkunin ng rice kasi medyo nagko-close up nga itong mga rice exporting countries prioritizing their own citizens, of course. So, ang problema ay, yun, I think yung buffer of rice natin, yung total supply of rice at least, I think it's been dwindling, but I have to verify this. But that's definitely an issue na kapag tumagal pa itong crisis, paano tayo kukuha ng bigas? Especially if many rice farmers right now ang nahihirapan ng impact, baka tumigil na sa pag-farm at naghanap ng ibang trabaho. So yun, so meron tayong potential rice supply issue in, hindi wala pa naman ngayon pero in the coming months siguro.
Okay, I just have a quick follow up question with that, no? Kasi, di ba, isa po sa mga, isa sa mga recommendations, no, is to make sure na walang impediment sa supply chain, lalo na sa agricultural sector in the Philippines. If you say po na meron tayong potential rice supply issue in the coming months, how do you think that should be addressed by our country right now? At ngayon pa lang?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was always going to be an issue kasi we were working under the assumption na This coronavirus issue really shocked everyone naman eh. So let's give ourselves some slack. Pero with the right clarification law, I think the NFA did not totally abandon its previous role as a buffer, as a keeper of supplies of rice. Meron pa rin, may ganong currency NFA, pero it was pared down with the rice tariffication law. So, ang tanong lang ay kung they have enough stocks, buffer stocks to tide us over in the coming weeks or months kapag medyo nagkagipitan na. Well, right now, I think kailan ba ang next na harvest season? Siguro later this year, meron namang harvest season. So, we can expect na tataas naman ng supply at least later this year. But yun, so sure as well, kung maubos talaga, ay paano tayo pakain? Corn na lang or ano, kamoteng kahoy.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Ito po. Okay, thank you for answering my question. Ito po, si Clarins Katubig, she asked at 9:13 p.m. With regards to our local government units, she asked, how can LGUs help in dampening the impact of the pandemic in the Philippines? Siguro, no, parang she'd like to understand, ano nga ba yung role natin mga LGU, especially in implementing those measures to protect the vulnerable people?
So LGUs at this point are very, very, very important kasi above anything else, sila yung makakaalam kasi kung ano yung pangangailangan ng mga tao sa kanilang mga jurisdiction more than the national government. Siyempre, ito yung mga barangay captain or ito yung mga mayor, saka yung mga governor. Sila yung alam nila yung situation on the ground. And when it comes to this part of coronavirus, kung saan top down talaga siya eh, na manggagaling may pondo na kailangan mong i-distribute sa mga milyon-milyong tao. So, necessarily, dapat may close working and seamless relationship between the national government on the one hand and the LGUs. Now, ang magandang illustration dito ay yung flight ni Vico Soto. Kasi, kung malala nyo, before ay parang meron siyang opinion na I think pinupush nila na magkaroon ng mga tricycle at least doon sa Pasig City kasi may mga, for example, yung mga emergencies or kaya naman yung social distancing sa mga tricycle. Pero this didn't sit well with the national government. So parang in the past days nga, they were castigating him for giving those opinions and, well, in fact, harassing him. So parang may ganong klaseng tension na ito yung meron on the ground eh, pero that's not necessarily seen by those at the national government. So there's a trade-off doon. And hopefully in the coming weeks, ma-resolve nila yun. Kasi otherwise, baka mahirapan yung delivery of assistance na kailangan mabilis. Pero kung may ganong klaseng iringan, ay baka mas mabagal maibigay yung ganong klaseng assistance at maraming mahirapan.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. It's 9:32. We will accommodate these last two questions. Sure. Are you okay with that? Okay. We're almost done. We've been learning so much. Ito naman po, interesting question from Sofia Bulalakaw. She asked at 9:22 p.m. Sir, do you think the fintech industry can help the government for them to give out money?
Oh. Yeah, oh. So, ano yung comment? Si Palois talaga. Mamaya ka na mag-flames. Mamaya na.
Ano?
Ang gagawin niyang flames. So, fintech. So, well, definitely, kasi marami doon sa assistance, you can expect na there's a debate in economics when it comes to giving aid to the poor kung maganda bang cash or in-kind. Kasi on the one hand, for example, kung bigyan mo ng bigas directly, at least yun ay makakain at directly makaka-benefit. Pero kung cash naman, ay may leeway yung mga beneficiaries kung paano nila gustong gastin yung ganong klaseng pera. So may ganong klaseng off. Yeah. Now, may mga studies in fact na nagpapakita na for example, may concern na kapag ka pera ang ibigay mo ay baka hindi naman nila gastusin sa pagkain or gamitin nila sa alak or sa sigarilyo or sa sugal. So, pero I think may mga studies naman na wala namang strong empirical evidence to that effect. So, pera is a good way of distributing aid quickly at least merong leeway yung mga beneficiaries to spend it depende sa kanilang needs. And thankfully, yung much of the emergency subsidies will actually be relying dun sa existing infrastructure ng Pantawid Pamilya Program. Kasi right now, for more than 4 million, 4 million ang beneficiaries ng 4Ps. Tapos, marami sa kanila ay nakakatanggap ng benefits through cash card. So in other words, parang debit card siya na you can just simply to go to ATM and get your monthly benefit. So doon din ipaparating yung marami doon sa emergency subsidies. So we have that kind of infrastructure in place. At I'm not so sure kung kaya na ba siyang ma-link, for example, doon sa mga apps sa cellphone or something. Pero definitely help later on. Pero the thing is, marami pa rin kasi yung mga beneficiaries who are, number one, not even not using yung cash cards. And in fact, they get their benefits. May mga pagtitipon, for example, sa basketball court, sa plaza, kung saan doon sila makakakuha ng pera. So not everyone uses fintech. And then the larger problem is that millions of potential beneficiaries are still not enrolled even in the 4Ps program. So they might encounter problems them in rolling out. But I think that this is the time to be innovative. So fintech could help. Maraming private citizens who can develop apps, for example, or provide fintech solutions to make it easier to deliver these aid.
Ayan. Okay. I hope that answered your question, Sophia. Okay. So we will welcome the question of Jelaline, and then si Ma'am Ami Lupo would like to ask her question verbally. Okay. So Jelaline's question at 9:31 PM. What will be the possible sustainable action po that the government will do regarding the allocation of the budget?
Sorry, can you repeat it, Tina?
Ito po. Siguro her question po no is how will this budget allocation be sustainable? I'm not sure how to interpret this, right? Jelaline, would you like to ask it verbally?
Ah.
If you're still here.
Si Jelaline.
Jelaline, if you're still here, you're welcome to ask your question. If there's any clarification. Is she still here?
Sustainability ng allocation ng budget.
Opo.
Well, ayun nga eh. Parang, I think what's lacking here is yung overarching plan. Kasi I think we have to go back to the basics muna. Na sino yung mga, as we have been discussing, sino yung mga kailangan ng aid and then anong forms ng assistance ang pwede natin ibigay sa kanila. I think yung ganong klaseng overarching framework is something that can guide yung pagbuo ng mga budget. Not just dito sa bayanihan na Tuhilas 1 Act, kundi dito sa subsequent na economic rescue packages that Congress will come up with. So, ganun. So, when it comes to budget sustainability, I'm not so sure what that means. Pero I think this has to be informed by an overarching framework na right now we're not seeing.
Okay, thank you so much. Ma'am Ami Lu, you're welcome to ask your question po.
Hello, Ami.
Hi, yes. Yeah, can you hear me well?
Sorry, tama ba? Girl or boy? Sorry if I missed
it. Can you hear me well? Yeah. Hi, can you hear me well?
Kami.
Yes.
Kami.
JC.
Ano ba nangyayari?
Para pa.
Ah, sorry, hindi po namin kayo maintindihan.
Wait na.
Baka pwede nyo na lang po i-type.
Okay, can you hear me well?
Para tayong nasa kidnapping situation.
Kasi Mila, horror movie. Sorry, pwede nyo namin maintindihan. Pwede nyo po ba i-type ang question ninyo? Unless the voice distortion. Okay. So we need to pick up the pace, no? Sorry, you have to skip that. Okay. Last po from Sir Lou Japuela. In your personal opinion po, will BSP QE create an inflation that will reduce the present purchasing power at the of the minimum wage earner? Sent us at 9:36 PM.
Yeah, so I think as I mentioned earlier, itong economic crisis natin ngayon, it reduced both aggregate demand and aggregate supply. So in that sense, it's ambiguous kung anong klaseng impact ito sa inflation. And in fact, I think that the next inflation figures will be coming in 2 days. Every 5th of the month, kasi siya lumalabas, published by the Philippine Statistics Authority, we can see kung so far kung tataas ba si inflation or hindi. Kasi yun nga eh, kasi this is a unique type of economic shock. Both demand and supply are capital. So we really can't tell. We have to wait for the data to see.
Okay. Clarify na po ni Sir Lu that this is the question of JP Rodriguez. Ayan. Okay, we're almost going to wrap it up. Important. Ayan, may note po siya. Si Ami, have you closed our borders to international travel early on? Economic damage will be less than that from a lockdown. Flattening of the curve.
Hello? Ay, nawala si Tina.
This is an important point to highlight.
Yeah.
Help to HH. What is HH?
Households.
Households and businesses is to ensure that they survive the quarantine and able to resume their regular economic activities when the quarantine is finally lifted. QE is probably not going to be inflationary during the lockdown period because of the price freeze and the contraction of consumer demand. Sorry for me lang po. Ano ibig sabihin ng QE?
Yeah, so QE is quantitative easing. So ito yung isa sa mga non-conventional types of monetary policy na prominent during the global financial crisis and its aftermath. So if you remember, si President Obama, this is one of the ways that they tackled the impact of the global financial crisis kasi they were working with very low interest rates, halos zero. So hindi na nila mababa kasi sabi natin, one way to stimulate the economy is to lower the interest rate. Pero they were starting on a position na ang baba na ng interest rate, so they couldn't lower it further. So they had to resort to alternative monetary policies like quantitative easing. So basically, that involves the central bank, the Federal Reserve, buying up assets, for example, of private companies, or yung mga bad loans, for example, in order to or to somehow inject liquidity into the American economy. Yung BSP, yung sinasabi natin 300 billion na liquidity infusion niya, tama yun, ay you can think of it as somehow similar to quantitative easing. It's not your conventional monetary policy. Si Governor Jokno expressed once na they were not willing actually to resort to these non-conventional monetary policies, pero in the end ay parang ganun na nga rin yung tinahak nila. So insofar as this is a quick way of raising money, this is actually good kasi we need emergency funds as quickly as possible. But yung 300 billion, we have to take note na you can think of it as a bridge loan. Technically, it's called repurchase agreement. Kung saan binigyan na ng pera ng 300 billion si Treasury, pero si Treasury will have to repay that in 6 months. So, temporary to na parang mabilis ang loan to na within 6 months ay kailangan maibalik ito sa BSP. So para lang talaga maitawid yung pangailangan ng gobyerno for cash in the meantime.
Okay. Nasagot na po ba yung tanong yung kay Clarence, what is liquidity infusion? We good?
Ayun, so liquidity infusion, ganun. So parang that's one way of shoring up the economy by injecting money basically in the economy. So liquidity infusion, conventionally, si central bank ay pwede niyang magbigyan ng liquidity infusion yung economy by lowering the interest rates or lowering the reserve requirements para mas marami circulating in the economy. Pero the important thing to note here is that yung 300 billion na pinag-uusapan natin is a direct help to the national government and not necessarily to pump the private sector as they normally do. So this is a direct help to the government. Anyways, the government naman yung kailangan ng pera for the financial aid. So ganun klaseng liquidity infusion for the government. Hello? Nawala. Nawala si Tina. Ako na ba?
Ayun. Hi. So I'm Dex. I'll be subbing for Tina habang Ayun, so thank you very much Sir JC for your for answering the questions. So right now I think we've answered all the questions. Do we have any other follow up or other questions from our audience? So ayun. Hey sir, do you want to say anything before we formally end our program?
Wala naman. So thank you lang sa lahat sa pakikinig at I thank you sa Good Govs sa